This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
I've been taking a lot of ground balls at third. Just mainly to get my arm back in shape. But I played a lot more first base the last two seasons than I have over there. So just getting work in there. Like I said, stretching out my arm. Want to be comfortable over there in case something happens or I got to be over there.
Justin Turner, you were hoping he wasn't going to have to play a whole bunch of third base out the gate. But now with Matt Shaw hurt and Nico Horner's hurt, and that's changing some of the dynamics now as the Cubs are actually counting the days before that opener in Japan. And it's been great to hear this guy's voice in the background of our lives once again. He is the color commentator for marquee broadcasts of Cubs games on the Marquee Sports Network, Jim DeShays. He's on Twitter at Jim DeShays and with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. JD, how you been?
I'm great, Dan. How you guys doing?
We're good. And like I say, it's just been nice to start getting back into the rhythm of hearing baseball again. How concerned are you about the overall health of a couple of starters on this team?
Not overly. Craig Council meeting with the media here this morning said currently with Shaw, he said nothing's off the table. So it sounds like there's still a chance he could be ready to go for the Japan trip. It seems unlikely, but they're not ruling it out. Nico sounds like will definitely not be going to Japan, but they feel really confident about his availability for opening day stateside here against the Diamondbacks at the end of March. So, it's a bummer. Obviously two key pieces aren't going to be available, but hopefully for a very limited amount of time.
Jim, realistically, you talked about that there is a slim chance that Matt Shaw could make that trip still. When would he need to start playing in games for that to be even a possibility?
I'm not sure how many at-bats he would need, what the ramp-up would look like. I think he's close, I think he's close to starting to play in some games. So it's different for every guy, and I think the key is how do you respond when you first get out there and you play. But obviously they're not going to want him to play every day, so it'd be play a day, take a day or two off, play again. So for me, he would need at least a week of game action and come out of that feeling healthy. But that's kind of a doctor decision or trainer decision.
Does this starting staff, as currently constructed, have enough velocity, enough stuff, enough ability to miss bats, so the overall pressure on the staff is properly lessened?
It's weird, right? It's not a high-octane staff, but it's a staff that performed really well last year. I know there's, people anticipate maybe some regression. It might depend on how Wrigley Field plays. Last year, it was pretty pitcher-friendly. Tyone knows how to pitch. He gets outs. He's not going to rack up a ton of strikeouts.
midfield, despite not being an overpowering guy, velocity wise, does get a decent amount of strength in. Hard for me to say. Ideally, in the modern game, right, you like a lot of guys that can throw 97 miles per hour and miss a bunch of bats. It's not the way this staff currently is set up. But I think they're going to be fine. I mean, I know that's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but I don't have great concern.
The reason I bring it up is because we're learning more about where we are with the third time through the order penalty. And there's been at least one study done that thinks we've overcorrected and that says that the overall cost of using higher leverage relievers for that third time through the order and the wear and tear on the high leverage bullpen, it might be worth asking some starters to try to stretch a little longer, an out or two. And especially looking at what has happened to the Cubs here in the last 2 years and the late season breakdowns of the high leverage bullpen, I'm wondering if the Cubs wouldn't be smart to be a team that considers some of that.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to wonder if in the evolution of the game, if we start using almost a pure six-man rotation and ask those guys to pitch deeper than they're currently pitching. So it's with roster, you know, limitations on how many pitchers you can have in your staff, that's tough to pull off. If you had two guys at the top of your rotation that could give you seven innings, obviously not every time out, but average six and a third or something like that, that's going to take some heat off the bullpen. Probably the only other way to deal with that is just to make sure you have plenty of depth down in AAA and be able to make some in-season line changes, because guys are going to get tender, guys are going to start to wear out a little bit. And just shut guys down, bullpen guys, shut them down, just give them 10 days off, if they start to feel a little tender, and have a plan B that you can bring up in the minor league. So the roster shuffle is becoming more and more important to have that many more arms available to get out.
We have a lot of things that are established, injuries notwithstanding, Jim, as we look at the way spring training is kind of picking up. And we know the Cubs get an earlier start than everybody else but the Dodgers, because that's who they'll see in Tokyo. What interests you the most about the whether it's a roster battle, a position battle, what interests you the most with a team that's pretty established and who's going to do what?
Yeah, every spring training we come into camp and we start thinking about who's going to make the team. And by and large, most major league teams know what their roster is going to look like on opening day. Injuries will change the nature of that a little bit. So there's not necessarily a lot of position battles here. I think the one thing that gets my attention is I do feel like there's more pitching depth. I think there's going to be guys down at AAA that are stretched out, ready to start, that can come up and help if needed. And maybe some of those guys actually end up converting into bullpen pieces. The Rule 5 kid, Workman, I'm a little bit intrigued by him. If Nico is down, Shaw is down, obviously his chances of making the ball club are getting a whole lot better. He's a good-looking defender, and he's got pretty good at-bats out here. He hasn't played above Double-A, so that's a little bit of a question mark. Those kinds of questions, Workman, Brujan, in the picture, what ultimately is the makeup of the bullpen and who fills what roles. Craig Council really stresses over. He just wants a good bullpen. He wants a bunch of good arms. And I'm on board with that. I think we sometimes get a little too caught up in, who's going to be the closer, who's going to be the setup guy. Just give me a bunch of good arms and we'll figure it out.
I've been a little surprised, Jim, at just to whom I've had to explain how many people have not been aware how good Kyle Tucker is. And maybe he's just got some level of like anodyne anonymity. But when I say, no, this is one of the best players in baseball who's on the Cubs, I get these weird looks. I just like, don't make me have to do a PowerPoint here to explain why this is one of the very best players in baseball. And it still feels to me like people don't understand how good he is.
Yeah, for whatever reason, especially with all the winning that the Astros have done. So they've been in the postseason a bunch. So there's been a lot of exposure. But I guess, when you've got Altuve and, Yordan Alvarez and, a lot of star power over there, and he's kind of a quiet guy. So maybe he flies beneath the radar a little bit. But yeah, the guy's a stud. I mean, he's he's a top 10 player in the league. He's a tremendous offensive player. He's a good outfielder. He's a good base runner. I mean, he does everything well. He's been great in the big moments. I'm with you. I think a lot of people don't really understand how good a player he is. And, you know, how many teams in the offseason went out and acquired their best player? Now, as soon as he became a Cub, you're like, okay, he's the best player on the team. Probably only happened two or three other places in baseball.
We are talking baseball with Cubs analyst Jim Deshaies from Marquee Sports Network. And Jim, we heard on the way in here Justin Tucker talking about taking balls at third base. I'm just curious as to how effective a guy at his age, who is clearly a professional bat with postseason experience and everything else, how much do you want to see him out there? Because you don't want to spread him too thin. You need this guy in a way, but also you want to make sure that he's good to go and stays healthy all season long.
Yeah, I don't anticipate. I mean, he's just being a pro, right? He's taking ground balls over there, getting his arm stretched out, being prepared if they ask him to play over there. But I don't get the sense that that's ultimately anything we're going to see a whole lot of, and maybe we won't see at all. I think that's not plan B. That's probably more like plan C or D.
It seems like that plan C might be necessary, though, as far as Tokyo goes. If there is no Matt Shaw, there is no Nico Hoerner, as I expect anyway, as the way things have gone. I'm just curious as to who do you think is going to be in that opening day lineup if it's not Hoerner and it's not Shaw, as far as those first two games go.
Well, you know, Birdie can play third base. He's played third base more than I think anywhere else on the field. He's a guy that plays all over, but I think he's comfortable at third base. I mean, I'll give you some idea of the versatility of Birdie. He made his professional debut as a first baseman in the division series last year. That's how much confidence they have in his, you know, positional versatility. Bruhan, the utility guy, can play third base. And Workman, the Rule 5 guy, if he's on the club, he can play third base. So I think there are a number of options before they would turn to Turner to play third base. I could be proven wrong on that, but that's just my sense.
I don't know if you hear it from other broadcasters, but when you have the opportunity to describe and enjoy somebody like PCA, that Pete Crow Armstrong makes games fascinating the moment he's on base. And I do think it was nice that they let him affect games, too. They didn't necessarily put the restrictor plate on him. And they said if he wants to do some of that bouncing and jumping around, and he's got a little bit of hot dog in him that they're gonna try to cultivate, which is cool by me. But if that second half that he had as a predictor, he's an all-star.
Yes, yeah. I mean, if he proves to be a league average offensive player, then he's a multi-time all-star in his career because he, you know, he's such a good defender and he's so dangerous on the bases. But yeah, there's a lot more in there. There's more power than people realize. The only thing that's currently lacking is doesn't take a lot of walks. But and that's the other thing with a young player, right? He's still just a kid. You don't want to put too much on his plate. You don't want to try to rein him in. Just go play. And then, you know, as he develops, if he makes mistakes in the field or on the bases, obviously you have conversations with the player. But in terms of trying to calm down his game, I don't think that's in the cards. It's like, just go be you.
I believe that the comp for him, I want to say somebody at FanGraphs said a sustained replication of that second half last year puts him on a like peak Lorenzo Cain level. Like you're talking a 5-win, maybe even a 6-win player, like you say, because the moment he steps on the field with that high quality defense, he's the value just starts accruing.
Yeah, and it's hard to quantify, but the other piece of it, too, is when you have that kind of speed on the bases, the pressure that it puts on the defense. You see guys, we saw in the game here the other day, center fielder misplayed a ball. It was an overthrow into center field. PCA was running, and he mishandled the ball because he was in a hurry to make a play. And Crow Armstrong comes all the way around to score on the play. He just puts a lot of pressure on the defense. He gets in the pitcher's head when he's on base. He's just a disruptor.
when you talk about Crow Armstrong, he's an obvious choice for a guy that could take another step this season just because of his youth and how he did play in the second half. I'm curious, Jim, is there anybody, pitcher or position player, that you're looking at as primed to take another step forward? I mean, with the teams full of so many veterans and guys who are established in what they do year in, year out.
Yeah, Amaya, Miguel Amaya would be the guy. His story was somewhat similar to PCA's. It really struggled early, and then the last couple of months of the season, figured some things out, changed his approach to the plate a little bit, and had a real nice finish to his season. So we'll see if he's able to sustain that. I think overall the catching situations, you know, indeed, you know, if Amaya is able to provide some kind of offensive lift, I think with he and Kelly, they got a nice little combo back there. Carson Kelly's really good in terms of game calling and some aspects of the defensive work. And he brings a little power to the position as well. So I think they're a lot better suited at the catcher position at this point this year than they were last year. You know, Yan Gomes never got it going. Amaya really struggled. So I expect the catching position to be an upgrade. And I'm curious to see if Amaya is able to sustain what he did in the second half of last year.
Is Kelly the kind of receiver that you prefer, that sort of quiet presence back there rather than jumpy and athletic?
Yeah, I mean, it's pitchers are all different in terms of what they like. I always like the guy with the quiet setup. And there's a lot of debate about, you know, down on a knee and snatching the ball, going low to high, not providing a target. I think if you're a command guy, you maybe want a catcher that's a little quieter back there. If you're a stuff guy, you want a guy who's mobile and is stealing you strikes. And ideally, you get a guy who is capable of doing both. I haven't seen a lot of Kelly. I'm basing most of my assessment on reputation and what I've read and what I've heard from other people. But I think he's going to be real good back there.
JD, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you guys. See you soon.
See ya. That's Jim DeShays.
Thanks, Jim.
The marquee analyst for Cubs baseball next to Boog Sciambi.
I thought that the Miguel Amaya thing, or I'm sorry, I think that the Miguel Amaya thing is going to be very interesting because I've kind of watched and kind of expected more than what we've seen, but he showed you a little something, as he said, like in the back half last year, but you want that consistency. That position is so important.
Yeah, I've heard Bruce Levine trying to assess the possibility of the split in total number of games caught, and that he thinks Amaya is going to be about a 90 game catcher,
so like a 60%,
about that. And then if that would be the proper workload to maybe build him into somebody who's 110-120 game kind of catcher. But this is catcher's a lot like running back now,
in that you split the work.
Yep. Yep, it takes a toll on you, and you need right matchup, right time, and you are going to have pitchers with preferences.
And also, I think what I like about that idea is if he does get hot, you can always DH him in terms of at the plate, so he could still feel involved in the game regardless, and be a good bat off the bench as well.
847, so what happened to last year's midseason call-up catcher? That would be Christian Bethencourt, who was incredible last year. But that, I don't think anybody who saw that thinks from, you know, a 32-year-old who just came in and got hot that's sustainable. It's not. I think they were happy to have it because it carried them for a while, but that's not an everyday catcher. That's a replacement level guy that you're happy to have in the organization.
That would be your idea of variance then? The way he played at the end of last year.
Yeah, I mean, good players can play badly for a while. Bad players can play great.
Just catch them when they're hot.
Hey, man, White Sox fans remember that season Ron Hassey had? Come on now. You're maybe 86 was that crazy Ron Hassey year. For a half a year, he was Babe Ruth. The guy was incredible.
There's been a lot of guys with a lot of half seasons or even quarter seasons like that.
Brian LaHare made an all-star team. Come on, it's baseball. This segment brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. The Bulls got a tank win last night by losing. Because thankfully Zubats played, because they don't know, they've never known what to do with that big, massive hunk of man.
Yeah, the problem is other teams were like, we're going to just keep pace with you.
I know.
We will talk all things Bulls when we come back. Bernstein and Harris, 670.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
Bernstein and Harris.
Bill, you're on the score.
Dan, I don't always like you, but I seem to lean your way most of the time.
Middays, Tyndall 2.
Thanks. Well, great.
We have 7 on the clock, 19 seconds to go. Harden against Collins. Harden comes up shooting. Bam!
Wow.
Oh, no! It goes to Kobe White. Kobe, topside from 35 feet. Good. Nice job by Kobe.
Yeah.
31 minutes. That's his fourth triple. And the ball game is over. And the Clippers come away with a win, 122-117.
All right, well, that's great. The problem is the Nets lost. The Raptors lost. The Sixers lost. Those teams are better at trying to maximize their draft capital than the Bulls are. And that's too bad.
What do you want, Dan? What
I've been very clear.
Tell me what you want between now and the end of the season.
I would like for them to lose as many games as possible.
Okay. To what end?
To get the best possible chance at a top four pick this year.
What do you see that as being? How high do you think they can climb in the tankathon
math.
Standings?
You,
no, because here's why I'm asking you now to clarify that. Because when you look at the standings and you see that it's not in a vacuum, there are obviously other teams, quote unquote, chasing, what is it called, capture the flag this year? You know, every year we got to have a nice cliche to go with it. But as of right now, they have the eighth worst record in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can get to 6 by my calculations because they have 23 wins. The Brooklyn Nets have 21 wins. And the Sixers, in their current 9-game losing streak, have 20 wins. So they are 3 wins better than the Sixers. They are 2 wins better than the Nets. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they can get to 6 in theory.
Okay, great.
If they lose more.
Great.
Here's the problem. Right ahead of them right now, with one more win than them, is the San Antonio Spurs, who have lost four in a row and don't have the services of one super sophomore, Victor Wembanyama.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose more games.
Yep.
Ahead of them are the Portland Trail Blazers, who have 26 wins. Now, luckily, they've won three in a row. The Blazers are closer to a play-in spot than they are to the Bulls. You got that? Over in the Western Conference. The Phoenix Suns only have 27 wins. The Heat only have 27 wins. So the Bulls, if they start winning games at a, let's say, one out of every four rate, could potentially catch more teams and end up with maybe the 10th or 11th worst record. And that would be...
I think it's got to be worse than a 250 winning percentage, though.
Right. Yes, they need to lose more than three out of every four games the rest of the way.
Right.
There's 23 games left. You want them to lose, let's say...
All of them.
18.
I want them to lose all of them.
But realistically... Are you benching Billy Donovan? Is that a thing that can happen?
I'd like to figure out some way to make this team less competitive.
The only reason I say that is because if you look at their last four games, they've been in every game. It's been close.
I know.
They've only won one. You're kind of lucky they've only won one game.
Way too close.
But you said it's dinner theater, right? They're in
the business. I'm saying they think that. I'm not saying I want that. I want them to lose every game.
I have bad news. They're not going to lose every game.
I know.
They're also going to win some games coming up. You know how we talk about playout games? The Raptors have 18 wins. They've created some separation. But they kind of need to lose their next game tomorrow against the Raptors.
It's worth two.
Yeah, because it's the Raptors. It's worth two.
That's why that game against the Sixers was a disaster.
Now they're 2.5 games above the Sixers.
Sixers aren't getting
closer.
That's over.
Yeah, they've probably been knocked out.
They passed you.
So now it's down to them and the Brooklyn Nets for the play-in spot. You know AK wants to see this team go to the play-in tournament.
I don't understand why.
Probably because they're in the postseason for another year.
This is the disconnect. This is what makes no sense. And I thought when they traded for a bunch of journeymen that maybe those guys wouldn't necessarily be interested, but here we are, Trey Jones, Zach Collins, Kevin Huerter, as Billy Donovan says, all making an impact.
All three of those guys have been great. You know, the first thing is they're great guys. I do think, you know, sometimes situations present themselves where maybe opportunities aren't there for someone, you know, like Zach that's playing the center spot in San Antonio, and they've got obviously Victor. It's, you know, it can be challenging, but it doesn't take away from him being a good player. And, you know, he wasn't maybe playing a lot earlier, and then, you know, Vooch goes down, it creates an opportunity for him, and, you know, he's really responded and played well. I think Kevin's a guy that, you know, I think the more and more you watch him play, he's got a lot of different things that he can do besides shoot the basketball. And I think it probably took him a little time just to get his legs under, feel comfortable. But he's shot the ball well here, you know, since the break, which has been great. And Trey's like a really, really heady point guard, doesn't really turn it over, you know, and he knows, you know, the shots that he should be taking. And, you know, he generates good looks for other guys, and then I think just defensively he's a guy that can pick up full. So I think all three of those guys have added to our team.
Oh, I know. I've watched them add to the team. I thought that, I don't know how interested they were going to be in playing this hard, but yeah, I mean, ideally, can we just send Billy on vacation for a while and like let Benny the Bull coach the team?
You think that's the answer?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I keep saying, damn, Billy and his stupid good coaching is going to make this team further away from winning a title.
So, you know, Josh Giddey, our favorite bantered about Bull, has now four straight 20-point double-doubles, right? And it's unique because he says, I'll give you double-digit rebounds tonight. And the next time I was like, I'll give you double-digit assists. Over his last four games, Dan, 24.3 points per game on 58% shooting from the field. But that's not the stat. Here's the stat. You ready? What would you guess he's shooting from three over the course of the last four games?
Josh Giddey?
Yeah.
Oh, the last four games? It's got to be like 58%.
Or 78%.
Okay, yeah. Like he's been crazy.
He's making 3.5 out of every 4.5 threes. Now, that was a knock on his game in OKC is that he couldn't shoot, right? He wasn't a great...
Yeah, I think he's up to like 38% on the season, isn't he?
Yeah, he's averaged 24.3 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists per contest his last four games. This year, he's shooting 38% from three. He had never shot above 33.7% from three. That is a problem because the man with the money is going to have to pay him now more money at the end of the season. And I cannot see a situation in which Arturis Karnišovas trades away Alex Caruso and opts for this young player, the 21-year-old, over a number one draft pick.
Yeah, but
and then gets to the end of the season and says, we're just going to let you walk.
Well, we'll see. It's just a stretch of games, and I think Giddey is a classic empty calories player. I think he's a stuffer of a box score on a bad team. I think this is kind of what he does. Is that somebody's got to do all this stuff. He plays the minutes. His flaws are too much for me.
Can you put on the AK virtual glasses?
I'm not AK, and AK's going to get fired if this doesn't get better.
This
so
group is really good.
I'm not going to think like him. I'm going to think like me in this case, and that is, this is not a serious player. This is not a winning player.
What's the number on the offer sheet that's too high for you? Since you're not AK, you're Dan Bernstein.
That's too high for me in context.
Four years. How much are you giving him? And saying, yes, we will match.
I'm not sure I'm going to be interested in giving him anything.
Oh, so if he's available for $15 million a year, you wouldn't pay that?
I'd think about it. But it's some of what he does. If you look at how he comes out in total value, he's a great fantasy player. He's an incredible fantasy player.
Yes.
He's just not that valuable a basketball player because of the number of turnovers, because of the number of times he takes like these weird off balance floaters. He can make some spectacular passes. He's an amazing inbounds passer, but if he's motivated to play defense now because he's trying to make money, I get it. I don't trust him to continue to play defense. I don't trust him to continue to get better at it. And I think these are soft numbers that he puts up on bad teams.
Let me give you a quote he gave Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times when asked about his recent play and what he's focused on for the rest of the season, knowing that it's a contract year. Quote, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't thinking about it. Every player in the league thinks about it, but I don't let it impact what I do on the floor. I don't come out here with any preconceived ideas of how I want to play or the numbers I want to put up to earn X amount of dollars or whatever it may be. That's Josh Giddey talking about his future. But man, he's got the pedigree as a former top 10 pick in the NBA draft. He's putting up the numbers. And it'd be different. I understand what you're saying about the empty calories. It would be different if he was doing this in Bulls blowouts. As you know, he's not doing it in Bulls blowouts. He's doing it in games in which the Bulls are competitive and putting on that compelling dinner theater that we talk about.
Yeah, I'm not in this for dinner theater.
I understand that. But if you're Michael Reinsdorf or you're Arturis Karnišovas and you attend these games and you see the stands are full and people are cheering and they're holding their last breath all the way to the final minute of a game.
You know what it cost to get in that game last night?
How much?
What do you think?
To get in, I'll say 20.
10.
Okay, 10.
That's starting to matter.
Okay. But that's the resale value.
I'm just saying.
Bought at the price.
The get-in price is something to watch. You're talking about, I mean, I know it's $3 in New Orleans. Like, that team knows how to do it.
$2. Well, it's also New Orleans. Since Hurricane Katrina, the population has declined by like what 30-40%.
But if you're talking about if they get Cooper Flagg,
that's problematic.
With Trey Murphy and with guys that are come back from injuries on that team,
Herbert Jones.
I'm telling you, they're a problem.
Jordan Hawkins.
That's how you shooters. Do it. That's how you do it.
Or if San Antonio gets. If San Antonio gets Cooper Flagg, gets run it back, Robinson.
That's how you do it.
And those guys with De'Aaron Fox. Yeah, that's... Whew.
Yeah, I'm really not looking at anybody on this current Bulls roster as being a materially important player with the possible exception of Modest Buzelis.
Yeah, in your eyes, Modest Buzelis is the only guy that would still be here when the Bulls are again good. Like top six in the East or top four even in the East, ready to make a charge at a playoffs, like one guy away from making a charge at a title.
And I like Buzelis, but I am not with those who believe he's necessarily on trajectory to be a star.
Right. He could be an important player. If he could be the third or fourth best player on a championship contender, okay. Sign me up for that. Meanwhile, Josh Giddey, I could see him being the fifth or sixth best player on a contender.
And then if you want to put a price on that and say, hey, it's worth it at 15 or it's worth it at 18, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not.
But the show that we do after we find out his destination, and if it turns out it's Chicago and it's $30 million per year, people's heads are going to explode.
Well, yeah, and some should roll as well. When we come back, it is time for High Noon, and I just want to remember Gene Hackman a little bit as we're getting some reports as to how suspicious the deaths of Gene Hackman, his wife, and their dog may actually be. That's next.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
It's your Thursday High Noon. We discussed Ben Johnson and his personality and this sort of Ben-gasm that's been going on at the Combine. I think it's a good thing with no downside. Marshall's grumbling about it. And we also heard Johnson get some granular stuff with Caleb, hearing the same things, the same stuff. Cadence, leaving the huddle, motions, shifts, all of that. Pre-snap. He also talked a little bit about his energy around the building. Ben Johnson did. There's been a lot from him. Jim DeShays was terrific checking in on the Cubs and also the still-too-good Chicago Bulls. It's Gene Hackman's dead at 95, and there will come a time and a place where we sort through what the facts are that are still coming out in dribs and drabs. And a TMZ is reporting at that their house in Santa Fe that there was no sign of forced entry, no sign of any gas leak, and there were some reports of some open pill bottles, etc. But they're still saying no foul play. They are calling the deaths of Hackman and his wife and dog suspicious, but it appears that there was a wellness check done after a couple weeks that they had been gone for some time. But at age 95, we had forgotten kind of that Hackman hadn't been acting since 2004. And maybe the single best actor of my lifetime, just a two-time Oscar winner. But, boy, more indelible, unforgettable roles than you can imagine. I think it depends on your age when you first realized some of this stuff. I was still probably too young for, you know, I didn't see The French Connection until later. I didn't see The Conversation until later. So for me, probably it was Young Frankenstein and his hilarious turn as the blind man that brings the monster in. And it was...
Spoiler alert.
I thought that was inappropriate. That was appropriate because I have not seen that movie.
Young Frankenstein?
I haven't seen Young American Frankenstein. Classic. I haven't seen...
It also came out in like the 60s, didn't it?
No, but that's why he said, depending 80s, on how old know. You are.
75, right? I think.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, before I was born. So,
and it was,
there's that.
He was just, that turn with Peter Boyle in that scene is just absolutely...
1974.
74, just perfectly hilarious. And I know that movie was really important. You know, my dad sort of raised me on Mel Brooks from a very, 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 very young age. And I remember how excited he was that was Gene Hackman. But really, Lex Luthor...
Yeah, that's it for me. That was my introduction to Gene Hackman, is Lex Luthor in the sequels, whatever. But he was just such a, you know, it was very comic booky, but he did a good job playing like this bad guy, Lex Luthor.
And even his good guys had a little bit of menace. His bad guys had a twinkle in their eye and could be anti-heroes. But boy, he won the Oscar for little Bill Daggett, the evil sheriff in Unforgiven. That's as mean a some bitch as you're ever going to see on the screen.
So what's your favorite Gene Hackman performance?
Probably Mississippi Burning.
It's a great one.
My personal favorite is probably Mississippi Burning, or I would say, you know, that the cameo in Young Frankenstein is wonderful, but his comic chops, where he's a straight man, but as the crazy right-wing senator in The Birdcage, he's brilliant. And the way he and Diane Wiest and Nathan Lane, and you talk about it, just an acting tour de force in that movie. And I saw La Cage aux Folles on Broadway. Like, so I'd be like, The Birdcage is so much better than the original version of the story. And obviously the story is a classic, but Hank Azaria, and I know he's said some lovely things on Twitter today about his experience with Hackman, but I would definitely have The Birdcage for me. Birdcage, Mississippi Burning. Obviously the performance in Hoosiers is memorable for a lot of reasons. And his, because people forget that Norman Dale was an abusive coach. Norman Dale was fired from his college job for hitting a kid.
That's unsurprising.
But people don't remember that's always lingering in this sort of redemption story about this small town. He had to go to the small town because he lost his job for hitting a kid.
When we talk about just movies that I enjoyed with him, so, and I've forgotten about some of these movies. Crimson Tide.
Oh, yeah.
Loved him in Crimson Tide.
Yeah, he's great. Well, you want to see a cast, by the way? Go through that list
sometime.
Oh, no, sometime.
No. I am more than aware. But also, and this is might not be on everybody's radar, I really loved him in Enemy of the State. One of his later roles, when you think about the span of when he stopped acting, this is, I think, 98. I loved him and Will Smith in Enemy of the State, and just like, he's, come on, man.
It's a good movie.
Why you bring me in this? Like, I don't want to, you know, I'm off the grid. Leave me alone. He had some great, he is undoubtedly a fantastic actor. Like, fantastic, good at what he does. Coach, top of the line.
Coach Jimmy McGinty in The Replacements. That's my favorite role of his. He's so good in that movie.
And that what's great about it is we can all say what our favorite roles, and it doesn't have to be necessarily critically acclaimed, but like it's just what you enjoyed. And he was good in so many different things. So again, Superman is the introduction. That's when I first got introduced to Gene Hackman. And then Enemy of the State. Obviously, I know about Hoosiers. I've seen it. I was like, whatever. But Mississippi Burning, that is a whoo. You know, I'm from Alabama, went to school in Mississippi. Like, you know what it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it felt real.
You know what it is. So, I.
773 says, I know you're not a Wes Anderson fan, but Royal Tenenbaums is one of his best roles. And actually, Royal Tenenbaums is one of the Wes Anderson films I found more tolerable than some of the others. It just pissed me off.
Also, I enjoyed The Quick and the Dead. Most underrated Hackman performance was The Quick and the Dead. That's from the 414. I did enjoy that movie.
Bonnie and Clyde was his breakthrough. I think that was really his first big job because he was working odd jobs at that point. He was just scraping a living together, like driving a truck or something like that, when he was rooming with Dustin Hoffman and is sleeping on his floor. And I think that the what really got him started was that role in Bonnie and Clyde.
Really just a
remarkable, remarkable actor who always was credited for bringing a little bit of himself to every role. But I always liked the fact that it was that even the comic characters had a little bit of seriousness to them. The serious characters had a little bit of sparkle to them. There was always a richness to the performance, whether it was an everyman or, like you say, or a literal comic book character. He found the through line of humanity and drama and comedy in a way that separated him from those who weren't great.
Another one that just popped into my head, and I love this movie. Have you seen Runaway Jury?
I think I did.
Runaway Jury was fantastic. I think Rachel Weisz, I'm trying to think, was it Cusack? I think it's John Cusack in that one. And just, it was, he thought he was in control, and they come up and they do him in on his own job in terms of controlling the jury.
Oh, spoiler alert.
That's deserved.
That's
no, it's really not.
No, it's fine. It's fine. If you haven't seen Runaway Jury, check it out. It's a good movie. But he had a lot of good movies.
Yeah, I mean he also
the catalog is solid.
Some of those are in Ooh, I Bought Another House, kind of not quite Michael Caine, but he did a lot of work. He liked to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe The Replacements. Come on.
The Replacements is a good movie. It's an entertaining movie.
It's not a great movie.
I didn't say great. I said entertaining.
He just said it's a great movie.
I love that movie.
That's fine. That's different than saying it's a great movie.
By my definition of what makes a great movie, it's a great movie. It doesn't have to be this, by the book, this is what makes a great movie a great movie. It can just be a great movie because I love the movie.
I'm upset. No, I just thought of this.
That flies in the face of I think there's some people who study aesthetics who would disagree with that.
You know who we should have called up for this? I just now thought about it. Anthony Herron, to get his thoughts on Gene.
No. He was okay. He was fine, I guess. You know where that's going to go.
Was he a world-class actor or was he just a movie star? You tell me, Anthony Herron.
We're going to go shopping next, and this has a little extra layer to it when we start looking at the free agent safeties that are available, because we have some pretty compelling comments from people who do this for a living about how difficult it is to scout the safety position, and then we'll go through the list of the people available. So back to the grocery store next on The Score.